This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. The new WHFR Journal, local news and views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hello, hope you're having a good day. Today is Friday the 18th of September 2009. If you're listening to this on a podcast, it's only new up to that date. Okay, we don't know anything happening on the 19th, for example, or after that. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR-FM and host for the Journal Show for today. My news director, Dennis Reimars, is in the area, actually waiting for a special guest to arrive on the Journal Show, and we hope to have that interview for you just a little bit later. Started just a little bit later in the hour. We'll have a big event here today at Henry Ford Community College main campus, Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road in Dearborn. It's the Tri-County Summit. So a lot of the chief executives, a lot of the administrative heads of departments of Wayne, Oakland, Macomb County are right here in one place today in our Administrative Services and Conference Center. And they're having, I guess, a great time trying to figure out how to keep the counties going in a difficult economic time, as they say. Thanks to Gary Warrenchuk for doing that. I noticed that Channel 7 TV camera crew is here, Comcast, and their TV crew is down here recording that event. So you might see at least some little sound bites or discussion of that later today on the other news media. And so we won't go on. We didn't go over there because, again, it's important enough. I assume all the big stations will cover the highlights of that if they, you know, come to any conclusions about solving the problems. And I'm sure it'll be on all the major commercial media. But here we do non-commercial things. That's right. We do things that are alternative, that don't appear in the big-time newspapers or get on big-time commercial TV or radio. So let me take a look. We'll go on down the events from the week from the Dearborn Press and Guide, the Dearborn Times Herald for this week. And let's see. If you follow the Dearborn City Council on cable television, they repeat that at least a couple times every day. The last Dearborn City Council meeting sparked a discussion. It saw members of the administration and City Council debating the merits of the city's controversial paid parking system again. Yeah. And there was a vote, 6-1, to sort of, extend what we have, extend the contract we have. We have an outside company that actually does parking system management. The dissenting vote came from, as might be expected on this issue anyway, Doug Thomas, who clearly said that it's universally not accepted by the public. Public don't like paid parking in West Dearborn. They don't want it. And the merchants don't want it either. That's his unequivocal statement, as he sees it anyway. Tom Tefelski, who often sides with Councilman Thomas on this issue, at least in the past, who is, of course, the city council president these days, said the decision to extend the city's contract with ParkRight, what a great name for a parking management company, ParkRight, R-I-T-E, too bad they can't spell. Oh, well. But ParkRight came amid discussions about whether some of the functions performed by the company could be kept in-house, saving the city some money. In other words, could the city actually do it? Often we hear the story about, oh, private contracting is the way to go. But maybe we already have some people working for the city who could help with some of these parking site management details. So that was a good discussion. So they looked a bit bidding out to a new vendor, but they don't want to change the vendor in the middle of the winter season, which is what it would be. I assume they mean Christmas or shopping. So there might be some confusion or whatever. So they're going to stick with the current vendor. And this is where Tefelski you know, had to vote in favor until they can review the whole issue, when it's a little bit, you might say, safer to change horses. You don't do that in midstream. I would think you don't want to change boats in midstream, especially if they're canoes. But anyway, the metaphor is mixed, but let's not worry about that. Yeah, that's right. Jay Koronick, your host, former English teacher for 18 years here at Henry Ford Community College, can't resist talking about spelling problems and grammar because it affects the ideas, okay? If you don't use the right words, you don't communicate the correct ideas, and we never want to get people confused. Still discussion going on about a performing arts high school at Dearborn High School, and that sounds fine. The group is trying to raise $10,000 for sort of a pilot program. The group in Dearborn is called Arts Alive Dearborn. And so this has not been approved yet. We talked about this idea when it first came up. I think the bad news about this, the good news is, oh, that's an intensive way for students to study music and art before they graduate. Drama, too, theater, maybe even I'll toss in video arts into that, video communication skills. I know that was talked about before, too. Well, it's not finalized. The bad news is, unfortunately, the unfortunate news here is that, you know, music education, at least, is being curtailed across the district. And that is something that I think every student should get closer to. I don't necessarily mean they have to learn how to play an instrument, but music study, music appreciation, music history, theory, art appreciation, you know, and if they want to dabble and try out their skills, I think that should be part of a high school curriculum too. Just like I do, although I was very bad at every competitive sport in high school, just didn't have the physical skills for it, even though I went out for track as an extracurricular activity, didn't charge extra for it in those days. I was there. I was there for the exercise, basically, or the, I don't know, socialization, working with other people, the team spirit stuff. Although in high school track, you're pretty much a single entity, even except if you're running on like the relay team or something. Then every performance sort of counts. You got to work together. Your teammates hate you. But otherwise, you're all alone out there if you're running a mile race or whatever it happens to be. So I certainly wish them well in this program, but it's really too bad if it results that only students that really, really want it and they have to be at Dearborn High School will get any chance to get study and appreciation for music and or art or the video program. And they say budget cuts have led Dearborn to reduce its music offerings and we said that before, but new state graduation requirements from the state of Michigan are leaving high school students with little time to take electives, such as band. So I can't quite imagine why that would be the case. I don't know how many classes make a full load. In my day, we had 6 different hours of individual instruction. This is back in the 60s here in the Detroit area, not in Dearborn, but, okay, Flat Rock High School. But I figured if Flat Rock required, like, gym for everybody and music for everybody and art for everybody that, you know, and I took, I was on the college prep track. I took foreign language. I took all the math, all the science. I still had time in my studies each day to put in music and art, as well as the required phys ed class. Is that required in our high schools? Probably still is. So I don't quite understand how the statement is that students will have little time to take electives, such as band. I mean, I know the graduation requirements of the state of Michigan. I've seen them. They're no worse than I was required to take at Flat Rock High School in the 1960s. And I still had time for extracurricular activities. Track and the drama stuff that I did. And those were outside of class time. And math club and so on. It was outside of class time. But I still had time to take electives. So I don't quite understand how their electives are cut down here unless students in the last 20 years have been taking more electives than requirements. In other words, more classes that really than really what they need in a basic, solid, you know, academic curriculum. But I had plenty of time for tossing in one or two elective classes every term when I was in high school. I just remember being there a long time. So are the days shorter? I was there 7:30 in the morning to like 3:30 in the afternoon with classes. Okay, we had a study hall too. Everybody had a study hall. For an hour, you go to a room, you sit there, and you're supposed to do your homework or study something. Just sit down and shut up. And I usually was able to get most of my homework done in that hour, surprisingly. Although most students, it's true, just sort of talked, fooled around, got passes to go to counseling. So it really wasn't worthwhile, and I believe they've cut out the study hall concept. Because it, for most students, nobody studied, so at least during that hour. And I don't think they studied even outside that hour, but then again, I was into studying. I thought it was fun. Imagine, education, learning new stuff that you can apply and give you all kinds of ideas for your life and take you all kinds of new directions for jobs and relationships. I mean, really, there's so much to know. And there's so much fun going on. And don't let schools or colleges stand in your way. I mean, or teachers. Just keep learning. Keep growing. It's so much fun. I just took a class last year here at Henry Ford Community College. Yeah, I took a class. Okay, it wasn't for credit. But I sat through it. I did all the reading. I took notes in all the lectures that I attended. Astronomy 131 here. And there's a planetarium that we have on the campus, and it was a great course. And I learned a lot, and I thought I'd been keeping up with all the specials on the History Channel or Discovery Channel or whatever about the planets and the universe, but nothing like a single class to tie it all together, to focus it, and you know, a lot of reading and exercises. We've got a great astronomy intro class here at Henry Ford Community College, and that's just one of the things that, I mean, I have a tremendously increased appreciation and knowledge for all the things that are around me every day. You know, the sun, the moon, the stars, the universe, all the science exploration is so, so exciting, you know. So in any event, that's the story about, as they call it in the Press and Guide, is fame coming to the Dearborn High. That's really the an idea for intensive performing arts education. Apparently, if you can do a school within a school, and they're still figuring out how they do that, they get some exception, I guess, to the state graduation requirements, so they can offer them more classes in band or other things. So I wish them well in the exploration. It's too bad they can't do more of music, art, and other performance skills like drama, theater, video for all of the students, you know, in all of Dearborn. And you might say, "Oh, I don't want to learn that stuff." There's a value in everything, and it is something that's in your life that, one way or the other, music and the arts can add so much to your life. And maybe you don't think so in high school, but you got to believe it's going to be true at some point. And so let's keep studying. There is a difference. Let me just jump back. I hate to jump back and forth, and because people get confused when they're listening to the new WHFR Journal. Station making waves. We don't do what any other station does, you know, in town. Anyway, there's new fees and hours for the people who are parking. So they did change something with paid parking besides extending the contract to the management people. Now get this. Two of the city's metered lots. Oh, my God. Only two? Which two? It's the big lot north of Michigan Avenue and West Dearborn, and the sort of bigger big lot south of Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. Okay. They're going to now offer a $2 flat fee to park after 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Why not Sunday? Why not Sunday? Nobody goes there on Sunday. No, that can't be true. They don't party after 6 p.m. on Sunday. Okay, maybe that's true. And I know I went to a WHFR event at one of the dining facilities in West Dearborn last semester and had to run out every 2 hours to put more quarters in the machine. I mean, I thought it was only being there 2 hours. Turns out it was there over 4 hours. So I had to go out twice to toss quarters in. That was no fun. Okay. So what it's going to be is 2 hours after six, flat fee. What happens if you get there at 10 o'clock? Let me just read you the details on this. And, you know, I'm not in favor of, I mean, I like the simplicity of one flat fee. But we have so many parking rules and regulations. Even Doug Thomas, and watching that cable meeting, if you get it on either WoW or Comcast in Dearborn, it was quite entertaining. Because he said, how many changes have we made now? How many changes have we approved over the original plan? They're going to keep changing it until they find something that works, I guess. I don't know. They're trying to make it more user-friendly, of course. So tweaking, and hopefully it's not more confusing. And so this is for lots C and H. I've never seen alphabetical signs, but I'm sure they're out there somewhere at taxpayer expense. They've had to put up signs saying, this is lot C, this is lot H. Oh, my God. If you decide you're going to spend more than 4 hours there, you don't have to play around with putting quarters in. Lot C is located on Garrison between Mason and Monroe. Lot H is on West Village Drive that runs parallel to Michigan Avenue, south of Michigan Avenue, between Mason and Monroe. So Mason and Monroe, folks, north and south. Both are metered lots right now. It means you can also use the meter if you feel it's necessary. But Councilman Doug Thomas doesn't believe the change can be positive. And he says, just another Band-Aid. We change it and change it. Things don't happen. I'm not clear of how that fee is paid. Okay. Some merchants may validate people's parking card or whatever to give them their $2 back. Or maybe they just give them $2. That's up to individual merchants. That hasn't been decided. I don't think there's any validation going on during the day from merchants at this point out there. I'm not sure. What's happening Monday through Saturday for all locations metered and cashiered is we'll have cashiers on duty. This is human beings that could pay money, not much probably, in the surface lots and parking decks until 3 a.m. to collect parking fees. Basically, we went from having a parking attendant from 9 a.m. to 4 a.m. and drew that back down from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. with a cashier on duty until after 3. What's the difference between a cashier and a parking attendant? Oh, my gosh. So I have a feeling there's going to be a living, breathing human being there to take your $2 flat fee, unless the meters will automatically with, 25 cents an hour after four quarters go in, automatic. No, that would be wrong. That would be wrong. That's only a dollar. And they say they want $2 after 6 p.m. So I don't know if they're just redesigning and therefore recalibrating the meters, or whether they have had now to put a living human being there to take the $2 flat fee after 6 p.m. See how confusing this is? It should be simple. Even if you want paid parking, it has to be simple so that it can become easy to understand and popular with people. When it's complicated, people are going to be just as mad about paid parking, or even more mad, than if it was simple. At least that's my feeling. Same thing goes with all the other City of Dearborn regulations. We don't have simple. We got confusing. And then I have to pay extra people to explain it to you. Now, maybe there's a reason for every little teeny rule, but I think the upset that's caused by a myriad of rules and the enforcement issues and the education issues sort of negates the advantage of all those rules. To me, it does. And besides, it is a public relations thing. You know, it's not just money coming into Dearborn, although that's, you know, part of it. You've got to have money to keep the lots in good shape, I guess. And especially those parking structures have to be swept and cleaned and monitored. We don't want nasty drug deals going on the third floor or something. Just kidding. I'm sure that doesn't happen. All the opinions expressed in this show, I need to say that this is the new WHFR Journal. Local views and local news and alternative views, and these views are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Not necessarily. We're still awaiting the arrival of our scheduled guest for today, and you know, I don't want to blame them for not being here right at the top of the hour, because the parking around here is crazy today because of the Tri-County Summit and the news people. And they've got a couple of lots, general lots, closed to the faculty and staff. So, okay, so our guest can't make it today. She has to reschedule for whatever reasons. But we certainly understand if she couldn't find a place to park. If that was the issue, boy, I know. I had to walk in from way back. The good news here is here at Henry Ford Community College that they are rapidly completing the work for this year. They're still resurfacing and redesigning our north parking lots for next spring and summer. But we'll be back to more than standard capacity just about 3 weeks from now, just somewhere in mid-October. So they're finishing new sidewalks, and they're putting second layers of asphalt down on roads that have already been driven on for a couple months to make them nice and smooth, and it's really looking good, but we're not quite there. Too bad they didn't have it more together for the Tri-County Summit today, because I'm sure a lot of county leaders said, what's going on here? Well, first of all, we put people to work, you know, and we will have spaces for all the new 20% increase in students that are here at Henry Ford Community College this fall, desperately trying to get retraining going towards new careers and so on, in the most economically efficient way too, because our tuition is low, but our standards are high here. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And happy to be able to say that, honestly. Nobody tells me what to say here. It's true. The Henry Ford Community College, they don't get involved in this show, or even though they hold the license to our station, they could get involved on a daily basis, minute to minute. We talk about Henry Ford Community College because we like the place. And we play the public service announcements. In fact, our staff on the shows, they have to play some PSAs. They play those Henry Ford Community College ones. It's their choice. So they'll play the ones that they think are really, really good news about the college. And so just so you might think, oh, college runs that, and they force them to do it whether they want to or not, whether or not they... No, everything we do here is because we believe in it. We, the staff, which is more than 60 people, and most of them, if you didn't know this, are unpaid. They are volunteers in the true sense, trained here by us, but... And there's rules to follow and so on, FCC and even our own station rules that are pretty strict. But, you know, hopefully it gives you what you need to know. Well, looking at one more story, and then we have, I think, a feature for the day of Jim Hightower and his little, very, very always entertaining, but very informative, and just always, he always sounds... so right. Of course, I guess Rush Limbaugh does for those who listen to him, too. He's always so right. If you could only research it yourself, then you would know not to trust any pundit, including yours truly. I'm looking at the Press and Guide from, again, last Sunday. Just want to mention to you, you should read both local papers, Press and Guide and Times Herald, every week. We can't possibly give you all the news that you need to know locally, and that's where it is. That's the best place to find it, not on radio or TV anywhere, including this show. We're not enough. But if I give you a taste for the local stories, you need to go to the source, the printed source anyway, and that's either the Press and Guide or the Times Herald, or what I recommend, both. Morris Goodman, who is part of the Democratic Party, and he's often done these little op-ed debates with a Republican, but nonetheless, he's doing an interview coming up in the Press and Guide with, over the next several months, three 19th District Court judges, Mark Summers, William Hulkren, and Richard Wiganek, and the three magistrates. What's the difference between a judge and a magistrate? Well, a judge is bigger and better somehow. Okay, the magistrates are Donald Elder, Linda Mack, and Helal, H-E-L-A-L, I think, Farhat. And so they're going to be interviewed by him, and the columns will tell you about them, and that's pretty good. That's really special information to find out about our court system directly from these people. It's been quite a while. Unless they're running for office, they don't get interviewed. They don't get talked about. In fact, I'm sorry to say, I don't do that either here. I don't usually interview magistrates or judges unless they're running for office. And that's our bad, certainly. But good to Morris Goodman and the Times-Herald, who's going to allow those columns to be there over the next several months. Going to be spread out, so you don't know which issue is going to have what interview. But anyway, congratulations for them for starting that up. Take a look just briefly here before we jump into Jim Hightower at the Times-Herald. I always like the Times-Herald because their headlines reflects a little of their own editorial bias. And for example, when they talked about the council meeting, as I talked about the paid parking issue here, they said, familiar issues are hot topics. Yeah, it was all deja vu over again. That's a little redundant, but that's true. It's just, you know, some issues do go on and on, and it takes constant attention or tweaking. On the follow-up of the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority Board, Michael Boettcher, he did submit his resignation last Thursday, so he did not, wait for them to fire him, I guess. They did put him on administrative leave, and I guess they were going to fire him, but I guess he decided there wasn't a way to make a defense among the people who were on the board, since they'd already decided to get rid of him, and it was kind of a shock to him. He says that they didn't like the way things were going. He thought things were going pretty well. He did accuse the board as meddling and in various of his activities, like micromanaging. You know, if you have an executive director, you need to maybe judge them frequently overall. But in any event, they just decided to change, and they did it, and he submitted his resignation. And so the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority Board does need an executive director now. Let's see if in the continuation of the story it says what's going on here. Okay, I turned to 2A. It says, please see EDDDA on page 2A. And I don't see EDDDA on page 2A. Shame on Times-Herald. I'm looking. Okay, Times-Herald, maybe you put it somewhere else. I'm looking through the first section here, and our listeners are waiting with bated breath. Nope, not there. Okay, but, you know, what are they going to do is the question, and we'll find out, I'm sure, in the next edition of the Times-Herald newspaper. Okay, we're going to also mention, I guess, right here, and I guess I have to mention who our guest was supposed to be today, because it's on the WHFR.fm website, Sharon Domage, one of the challengers for office of the Dearborn City Council. She did pretty well, came in sixth out of a field of 14. So she was in the top seven, and again, the top seven in after the November 3rd election will go on to being our council. And so something came up. I don't think it really was the parking thing. I did just see my news director showed me a note through our soundproof window here. It says that she has to reschedule. So something came up, and we'll get her on. We still have some open slots, and we'll get her interviewed. Obviously, you know that for many years, she, like 20 years or more, she was on our Board of Education here in Dearborn. And also, they wear two hats. She was one of our Board of Trustees members at Henry Ford Community College. So once you get elected on the Board of Ed, you're also part of Henry Ford Community College Board of Trustees. So we look forward to getting her rescheduled. So if you tuned in just for that, or you're on the podcast, yes, it was Sharon. It was to be Sharon Domage, and we'll definitely have her here in the future. She does want to be here. Things happen, you know. Okay. Let's go to Jim Hightower and his pre-recorded announcement. You can always go to jimhightower.org for all of his opinions. Let's see what he has to talk about today. A smart choice that isn't.
Chances are that you care about the nutritional value of the food you buy for your family. So you'll be delighted to know that a new, easy-to-see label has been devised for food packages to guide your nutritional choices. Under this handy consumer program, hundreds of approved food products in your supermarket are getting a bold green check mark printed right on the front of the package, along with a reassuring phrase, "Smart Choices." No need to read those tedious lists of ingredients on the back, for the simple green check mark is henceforth your guarantee of nutritional yumminess. For example, you'll find it on such items as Fruit Loops and Fudgesicle bars. Huh? Why is our government sanctioning these sugar-saturated borderline junk foods as nutritionally superior choices? It's not. The Smart Choices program is an industry scam, created and paid for by such outfits as Coca-Cola, ConAgra, General Mills, Kellogg's, Kraft, and PepsiCo. But even by industry standards, this is goofy. I mean, come on, Fruit Loops? A serving of this stuff is 41% sugar. That's a heavier dose than if you fed cookies to your kids for breakfast. Well, sniffs one of the designers of the corporate labeling scheme, it's not a matter of these processed concoctions actually being good for you, but of them being somewhat better than outright bad foods. For example, she says when choosing a breakfast item for your kids, better to grab a sugary cereal than a donut. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow, talk about setting a low bar for nutritional quality. Indeed, food manufacturers can slap a Smart Choice label on a product just by adding some vitamin C to it, even if that product also contains caffeine, saccharin, and chemical additives known to cause cancer and other diseases. That's not smart. It's stupid and deceptive.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Need to know? WHFR's Tuesday Talk, noon to 2 p.m., features two unique hours of information you can't get from any other Detroit radio station. Need to know about science? Hour 1 from noon to 1 p.m., we're proud to present what we believe to be the best weekly radio science show. Are We Alone? Science Radio for Thinking Species, produced by the SETI Institute and hosted by nationally noted scientist Seth Shostak. Need to know about anything else? Hour 2, 1 to 2 p.m., the WHFR Forum, a wide range of program topics locally selected and, whenever possible, locally produced and hosted, from UFOs to metaphysics to intellectual history, from ecology to health. So check out Tuesday Talk each week, noon to 2 p.m. Science Radio is also available on the internet from SETI.org/radio. For the WHFR Forum shows at any time, go to our own website, WHFR.fm, and click on Forum. You need to know our mission. This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Hi there, my name is Jay Koronick. Happy to have you with us today. And we are, again, just for those that tuned in late, Sharon Domage cannot be our guest today. She has had to reschedule, and we will let you know in advance. Next week, we are expecting David Bozzi to be here. I think that's the person scheduled. And we look forward to having a 30-minute discussion with him about why he's running for city council and why now. In fact, I'm sort of challenging everybody. George Hart last week, and his interview is available on our website, whfr.fm, under Journal for last week's date, the 18th, 9/18. Why George? Why now? It's kind of a great line, right, to start with anyway, just like the Ford campaign to sell their cars. So now that we're talking about candidates, were we? Yes. Where is that story? Okay, I'm looking for it right now. What's interesting is, yes, on page 2A, well, on page 1, too, the Times Herald has broken the story is that not all council candidates have filed finance reports. Here's the story. Campaign finance reporting laws were instituted to add transparency to the political fundraising process, but local elective office candidates often are exempt from disclosing their financial backers because they accumulate less than $1,000, the amount at which reporting becomes mandatory. That's not the case here, however, said Dale Thompson, director of the Institute for Local Government at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. And we're quoting Mr. Thompson. He says, places like Dearborn, where races have been more contentious, are exceptions to the rule when it comes to local candidate finance reports. And the story goes on, as for what makes the city different or its political races more contested is uncertain. One thing that Thompson mentioned as a likely contributor to the phenomena is its relatively large size, a common thread shared with the other Wayne County communities that frequently have candidates who raise more than $1,000. And true to form, 13 of the candidates running for a city council seat in November's general election were required to file post-primary finance statements at the beginning of September. The only candidate who wasn't, and that happens to be incumbent Doug Thomas, filed a report anyway. But as of September 8th, 5 days after the filing deadline, and that's quite a few weeks ago, folks, so I don't know if this is old news or whether you can go back and supplement, but anyway, here's the story. The Wayne County Clerk's Office still was waiting on statements from five candidates. And we do think that someone running for public office should follow the laws appropriate to that office. Also know the laws of the city, state and county and so on, country, because they're kind of legislating and enforcing them, aren't they? Yeah, they are. So this is a negative, I have to say. I'm the one, the article doesn't say it, but I think it is. What's your opinion on this, five candidates don't have their statements in yet, as of September 8th? And of course, today, as I said, is the 25th. So maybe they've done something in between. We don't know that. But as of the 8th, they missed the deadline. Robert Abraham and Mark Shushanian. There's two of the incumbents. Challengers David Bozzi. Well, we can talk to David about that form and whether or not he submitted it next week. Ali Sayed, who is scheduled to be on this show October 2nd. And Patrick D'Ambrosio. Now, they haven't filed finance reports or requested waivers indicating they'd not accumulate over $1,000. Now, maybe they misread the rule or read it quickly, and they thought, well, I haven't brought in $1,000, so I don't have to fill out anything. You still have to put in a little bit of paper that says, no, I haven't gotten more than $1,000, and therefore I'm not going to file a complete report. Okay? So that I can understand that a candidate who's not totally careful with reading the rules and the laws about this, might think they wouldn't even have to put in that waiver because they just didn't bring in or spend more than $1,000. The discrepancy, it says in the article as it goes on, discrepancy in funding levels, not a discrepancy, but the difference, the shocking difference in the amount of money varies widely. According to a pre-primary filing, that would be before the primary in August, at a little less than $10,000, Shushanian has the largest war chest of any candidate right now. Wow, he's already got $10,000 sitting there. Wonder where that came from. Well, maybe previous fundraisers. Okay, saved up money. Maybe he wrote a check to himself and put it in there. I think you can do that. But he has the most money, so you're definitely going to see some direct mailing spots from Shushanian. Too bad he happens to be one of the people that didn't do the filing report as of September 8th or the waiver. Now he's got to use his direct mailing war chest to explain why he didn't. If he cares, if anybody even reads the paper and understands that he didn't do this. His statement indicated he has conducted no fundraising activities for the upcoming election. The statement also shows that the only thing he spent any campaign money on was $880 for tickets to four charitable events. That's goodwill, you know. Oh, Councilman Shushanian is helping our cause, fundraising, probably nonprofit events. You know, a friend of the community. But it's interesting, you can use your political campaign money to make those contributions. Does he spend any of his own real money that way? In other words, his campaign money is money that probably, again, maybe he put money in himself, but that campaign pool, mostly, I would assume, if he has any supporters at all, came from other people. So he's using other people to make nonprofit donations to help his political image. What do you think of that? I don't know. It's okay. I mean, I think contributions to any nonprofits are important, necessary these days. We wouldn't say no to them at WHFR, certainly. We would say nice things about whoever wrote us a check. Hope the council candidates are all listening. Well, joining Shushanian as big money holders, according to the story, are, perhaps not surprisingly, some of his fellow council members. The incumbents always can get money. They always can raise money. They just have to try. As of September 8th, Councilwoman Suzanne Serini and Nancy Hubbard had $8,058 and $6,705 respectively. So Serini, $8,000. Nancy Hubbard. I wonder where Susan Hubbard is these days. She's a commissioner of Wayne County, isn't she? Or is she a judge? She's a judge, yeah. Sorry, Susan. How soon we forget. So $8,000 and about $7,000 for Serini and Hubbard. Tom Tefelsky has got about $8,000, according to his statement. And Councilman George Duraney had a balance of $3,700. On the other end of the spectrum is Doug Thomas. He has not raised or spent any money on this election so far. And, you know, an incumbent's name means a lot. He's got a big reputation in Dearborn for all kinds of things. That's just a joke there. But, you know, he's well known. And so maybe he doesn't have to spend anything, especially being an incumbent. Although he wasn't very close to the top. I don't remember where he placed out of the top 14 in the primary election. So he might want to consider at least one ad for himself. Although maybe he might feel if people don't want to reelect him now without any, you know, extra effort on his part, that maybe he just won't be there again. We hear constantly how he has a nice place in Florida and that he spends a lot of time there. That might be my guess. Although, you know, Doug Thomas, you know, I'm just saying, if you want to be on the top of people's minds, you're going to have to do that mailer at some point, probably. Also carrying little cash is newcomer Ali Sayed, who spent all but $78 of the $9,686 he raised to help advance him past the primary. So he's got he spent all of that. So he had, and on his own yard signs and that, he spent over $9,600 on yard signs just to get, and I think he got the last place in the top 14 out of the 25. And it took him $9,600 to get his name on the ballot. But now his name is there, and his signs are already still around. I don't know if he's got more that he's going to distribute, but those mailings cost $10,000 or more to all the people in the community, direct mail to each house. And if he wants to be competitive, he'll probably need to do one of those. Anyway, former Public Schools Board of Ed member Sharon Domage, who was scheduled for today but couldn't make it, is positioned similarly with only $70 in reserve cash, according to her statement. So politics takes money. Only the rich should run. No, that's wrong. That's just downright wrong, isn't it? If you're a great person, you've got great experience and great education, but for some reason you don't have much money saved, you don't have much income, you don't have a lot of rich friends, you're not willing to sell your soul, if you will, to a couple rich companies or corporations, you can't be one of our public servants, because you won't get elected unless you spend a lot of money. As a challenger, you don't have much chance unless you spend a lot of money, whatever it is, for whichever race. In Dearborn, I'd say, not just the primary, where some of these candidates spent almost $10,000 to get successful in the primary, you're going to need another $10,000 to $15,000 or $20,000 for various campaign stuff, signs, direct mail. Fundraising dinners cost money up front. What if nobody comes? Oh, that's bad. In any event, maybe a total of $20,000 to $30,000 to be successful as a challenger, maybe a little less, maybe $10,000, $15,000 less to be successful as an incumbent, unless you really get into trouble. Public humiliation in order to get reelected. So how much is that training program to get into the film industry that they're offering at the Lifton Institute for Media Skills? Their classes start October 26th. Doesn't say that they have VocTech certification. They probably do. Doesn't say they have any transfer agreements with the usual higher ed institutions, public and private. Get this, the tuition ranges from $5,000 to $12,000 each track. They have several different specialties lasts approximately 15 weeks. They say state funding is available for qualified applicants. Michigan Works program apparently is able to go towards that. These are people who are being retrained. That's what I would put it. You know, if you want to go in the production department or the art department or even camera department, it's not as cameraman, but these are all assistant people. These are people that are so-called below the line, not necessarily creative people, but people that already have knowledge about electronics and construction and can be professional assistants within the filmmaking process. And so they're basically teaching about the process, you know, who to bow down to, who to follow the word of, the different job titles and so on. I happen to feel that $5,000 to $12,000 is way too much. Although I know that there is a broadcast school in Detroit that charges $13,000 now for 10 months, but 10 months, hey, that's 40 weeks at least. So this is $5,000 to $12,000, depending on your specialty, for 15 weeks. Pretty pricey. Are they promising a job after you get through that? No. But if you're really, really good, well, like in everything, they might. Just want to make everybody clear about that before they go out to pay their money. Okay, that's the Dearborn Times-Herald for this week. Actually, it comes out on Monday. Folks, if you're looking for it around town, you'll probably find it at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center and other places on Monday. I get the subscription delivered to my house on Monday, and the date is technically Wednesday, the 16th. Taking a look at the Press and Guide. By the way, in just less than 15 minutes now, big band. Music was over at 1 o'clock, and coming up at 2 o'clock, right after the new WHFR Journal, we have Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska. She will be here at 2 o'clock right after the show. Dearborn Public Schools are discussing class sizes and late starts, too. Why is it that it's wonderful. They added a whole bunch of kindergarten teachers at the last minute and a handful of elementary school teachers. A smattering of teachers for other grades, too. And why did they have to do this at the last minute and then rearrange who was teaching what? And it's kind of a mess for the teachers because they just don't know how many students to expect when they open school. Okay, some people are blaming the administration or teacher unions, switching us around at the last minute. We've got to have enough teachers for the students. Just so you know, it doesn't mean they have a better teacher-student ratio. Okay, doesn't mean that's happening. It just means they had enough students, they had to add some extra classes, extra teachers. It's always good to have more teachers, but that's because they had more students show up, especially at the lowest levels, I guess, elementary, than what they expected. Speaking of candidates for office, Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. has competition in the November 3rd election, and Michael J. Pruss, or Pruss, P-R-U-S, is the only one. There wasn't a primary issue because he was the only one there. So he's the challenger, and he goes on to November. And so in November here in Dearborn, you have a choice of either voting for incumbent John B. O'Reilly Jr. or challenger Michael J. Pruss or Pruss. And there's a picture of him, so you can see what he looks like in the paper of the Dearborn Press and Guide this week. He says he wants to debate Mayor O'Reilly. He wants 3 debates before the November 3rd election. And the mayor says he's willing to accept the challenge. Mayor O'Reilly simply said, "I'm ready to debate Mr. Pruss or Pruss on any stage he chooses." So I guess they have to be on a stage somewhere. No, I just mean in any situation. In other words, maybe over WHFR radio or, you know, at a high school or a League of Women Voters meeting or whatever. So the mayor is willing to do that. He didn't say that he wanted to be part of 3 debates. Okay. But he said he's willing to debate. They got a letter from the challenger. And the office says, "It's the last I heard about it. There's been no discussion regarding specific times or locations." So I don't know whether Mr. Pruss or Pruss is waiting for a call from O'Reilly, or whether he's going to follow up his letter asking for the debates himself. And Mr. Pruss or Pruss couldn't be reached for comment prior to the press and guides deadline. So, I don't know how long they tried to get him. Here at WHFR, we're trying to give free airtime, equal amount of airtime for all the challengers in the Dearborn City Council election. We can't so far, and we've been trying for over 2 weeks now with letters and emails, we cannot get in phone conversation or email connection with two of the seven. So I guess they don't care about WHFR radio. But it's free, folks. What does it say about a candidate? Are you really a serious candidate if you won't take the opportunity to get your message out on every free opportunity that's offered to you, right? What are you afraid of? Just like one or two, and I won't say now because I don't have my list in front of me, that did not respond to the League of Women Voters before the primary election. They didn't write out their 100-word statements about why they're running and what their background is and what their issues are. What are they afraid of? Don't they have a background? Don't they have issues? And yet, one or two of these people that didn't respond to the League of Women Voters before the primary, I saw they had yard signs out in West Dearborn. Didn't see any yard signs for these people in East Dearborn, where I live. So I don't understand. If you're running for office, you're running for office. You just think it's fun to see your name there? Is that why you had 60 or 75 people sign your petition? Didn't they want you to really run to make an effort? I don't understand what's going on. Part-time job, of course. That's what city council is. Not a big-time salary either. So you just campaign part-time? Why would you turn down free advertising, free information about yourself that would get people to vote to you, like League of Women Voters? Or being on WHFR. I mean, they don't accept our offer, and if you didn't see their name, the League of Women Voters information, which is still on Dearborn Heights League of Women Voters, and it's just an acronym, but Google it, okay? Google League of Women Voters Dearborn and get to their website. They still have those campaign statements for the Dearborn City Council candidates right there. You can read them, print them out if you want to. So I don't understand how some, but Mr. Pruss, who wasn't available for comment, apparently just has to start negotiating with the mayor, and we might get a debate somewhere in some context on some of these issues. And in Pruss's letter, he said, it's our responsibility to present the issues that affect the city of Dearborn and citizens. I think debates are the responsible way to do it. I agree with him on that. I think the mayor should debate him. I don't know if he needs three debates. I think an hour debate with both of them should be good enough. There's only two people, of course. So we'll see where that goes. We'll see if that gets scheduled and, of course, reported here. Not necessarily first, but we'll let you know on that, however it's going to happen. I don't know if the League of Women Voters is going to be involved in that or not. A couple ironic things. Motorcycles in serious crashes on the headlines, on the front page of the Press and Guide this week. Dearborn police officers gather information, they're shown gathering information from people. Last week, Saturday's Hog Heaven benefit raffle and pig roast outside the American Legion Fort Dearborn Post 365. A biker attending that rally, which is for bikers, was struck from behind by a hit-and-run driver upon arrival and fatally injured. Isn't that ironic? I mean, it's a benefit and raffle. And he's killed by a hit-and-run driver? Unrelated, elsewhere, somewhere on I-75 in Detroit, former Dearborn Police Chief Tim Strutz was seriously injured. He's in critical condition, or maybe out of a critical condition by now, I hope so, for his sake, when his motorcycle crashed. And I just wanted to say about that, as a motorcycle rider myself, at least I still have that endorsement on my license. I haven't ridden a motorcycle recently for a few years. I haven't owned one for a few years, but for anyone thinking about getting a motorcycle, it is a good idea. The accidents are, I mean, they're not totally unsafe if you get the proper training and instruction. If you're a first-time rider, and even if you've been riding for a few years without the proper training or instruction, I highly recommend, this is an ad for a nonprofit here, the Motorcycle Safety Foundation. Go to their website. You can get manuals, instruction manuals. You can look for where the classes are offered. Yes, every spring we offer in our Center for Lifelong Learning here at Henry Ford Community College, the Motorcycle Safety Foundation courses for first-time or even 20-year veterans of motorcycle riding. I took the course myself years ago. I learned so much. I was able to be a really good, safe motorcycle rider from day one on the highway. I passed my motorcycle rider's exam at the Secretary of State's office with flying colors, and other people, the guy in front of me, he flew over the handlebars when they asked him to stop quick. He was only going 3 miles an hour. He pulled the front brake lever instead of the rear brake lever. Really pulled it. And they passed him. Oh, my God, they put him on the highway. You're fine for the highway. Just remember, the right brake lever is on the right side. The rear brake is on the right side. Oh, my gosh. Nonetheless, you learn which one is for which brake, as well as how to stay on the bike, how to keep it upright, as well as the appropriate traffic rules in your states, which are a little different, a little more specific for motorcycles than cars. And it's a great thing. I've always believed in education. So there's a horrible picture of that of the motorcycle all mangled on page 3A of the press and guide. And just very sorry for those people. It's just very tragic. A motorcyclist, yes, because they are so exposed, they're not sitting in an iron cage. They can be injured greatly. As a car driver, you need to give them a little bit of space. Okay. But good people. I've been out there myself. Motorcycle riders are good people. They try to be safe and fair, most of them. Those that have been properly trained know how to handle their bikes real well. But oh my gosh, people who don't drive safely, they can kill a motorcyclist quite easily, as well as a bicyclist or a pedestrian too, and we have a lot of accidents like that. Don't look on this as a criticism of either former police chief Tim Strutz, oh my gosh, he's a motorcyclist, or anybody at Hog Heaven or any motorcyclist. This is a problem for we drivers. They should have pictures of cars there, ugly car drivers or something, because the problem is not, in this case, it's not with either Strutz or the person who was very tragically killed at the American Legion post last week. But get the proper training. But even as drivers, watch out for motorcyclists and give them a little bit of extra space. And especially if it's raining or something, for gosh sakes, you know, they got a bigger problem than you do, even if your windshield wipers don't work right. They still have a bigger problem fighting the weather here in Michigan. Don't forget the bikers. I'm a bicyclist these days around town. Watch out for me. And also, of course, the pedestrians. Okay, turning the pages here. Here's the update as we conclude our show. Oops, only about a minute to go at the end of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, September 25th, 2009. Still that budget crisis coming up October 1st, a week and a half away, a little more, I mean, 10 days, 11 days away from now. No, theoretically, it's 6 days away, isn't it? Yeah. Tim Skubick reports that Dems put Dems, that's the Democrats in Lansing, put vice grip on GOP in Michigan House. Not very nice. Tim has been saying some rather nasty things about the Democrats in the House. I wonder where Gino Polidori stands on that. Or State Senator Irma Clark Coleman represents part of this area, who's listening to my voice now, too. She's in the Senate, so they're probably really nice Dems in the Senate. But we're going to have a terrible crisis. We don't have a plan yet what we're going to do. $1.7 billion, maybe it's $1.8. Jack Lessenberry of the Metro Times said it might be $2 billion by the time October 1st gets here that we've got to cover. So what do you want the legislators to do? You know, what do you want them to do? I don't know. But keep in touch. Tom Watkins of the... he's formerly with the State Board of Ed, but he's on his own. He's a state leaders will be judged on how they handle these tough cuts and whether or not they want any new taxes, too. So I don't think anything definite has been announced yet, and it's very scary what's going to happen to our state when we got politicians in charge rather than people that want to solve problems, really solve problems for once and for all. Well, thank you for listening today to the new WHOR Journal. Next week, we expect to have City Council candidate David Bozzi on. For the first half hour, and all kinds of other stories about what's happening in this area. Thanks for listening. As I said, take care out there, and stay tuned now for Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska. This is WHFR Dearborn.